It plays when we don't want it to, and then when we want it to.
You can't win.
Yeah.
Hello, all. Welcome back to the Sprocket Podcast, where we simplify the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores. We're broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communication and the internet. And today, multimedias.
Yes, multimedia presentations.
Yes.
Does that make us sound dated?
I guess it does, doesn't it?
With HyperCard.
I like multimedia.
We're in the studio with Dan Kaufman and Zed Bailey from Crank My Chain Cycle TV. Is it PDXK TV? Is that a different thing?
PDXK Productions is our business, you know, it falls under. Kind of the corporate master. Really.
Right. And legend and lore from Portland bicycle culture of all stripes. So welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
Really appreciate it. We are, I believe we're enjoying some ciders. Which one is this again?
This is all Newton.
Newton's folly.
Yeah, yeah.
What was his folly?
Drinking
too much cider?
Maybe discovering gravity?
Yeah.
Things got really heavy. That was a stupid joke that I got from Thank you, Back to the Future.
He ain't heavy. He's my brother.
So, yeah, we got those. I've got just the inkling of Old Crow. Do either of you guys want some of this whiskey that's sitting on the table?
Sure, I'd have some.
All right. Do you mind using a glass that I used earlier?
As long as you don't mind losing your voice like me.
All right, simple enough.
Okay.
We're pouring it out right now.
The Old Crow will kill anything.
It really does. I feel like there is certainly there's some merit to that. Tell you what, I'll pour that out. Have at it. If you don't finish it, I'll finish the rest.
Now we got to start a drinking game, of course.
So what should it be?
Every time you say fantastic.
Oh, that's going
to
happen a lot.
Fantastic.
Kick it off. Yeah. I was able to join you guys at your event, which happens at VeloCult monthly on Wednesday nights. Is it the third?
The third Wednesday.
Third Wednesday of the month.
Yeah.
And I had the pleasure to be there for the last one in, I guess it was the end of March.
That's right. Yeah. It was great having you there and hearing your podcast. It's kind of the first, you know, we've done a lot with people coming up and speaking on the microphone, which you did, of course. And we've had people show their movies, talk about tours, do all sorts of different things, play songs, do interpretive dance. We've had it all. But you are the first person to come and play audio clips from your podcast. That was great.
I wasn't entirely sure how that would go, but it seemed to go okay. We got things worked. VeloCult has a fine sound system in their cavernous space. They got a lot of speakers, and there was a guy like across the room playing them for me. So that worked out nicely. Anyways, open bike happens every month. And how long have you guys been doing this?
Open bike we've been doing since the beginning of January or middle of January we started.
So it's still relatively brand new.
It is new. And, you know, I think everybody thinks that they, one, have to talk about bicycles and that they need to ride their bicycles there. You know, we're not judgers, right?
Of course not.
That's good. Neither of you
has... It's all Jesus loves everybody.
That's right.
You know? And that's your nickname, is that correct?
Yeah, that's my bit of my moniker. I come up as Tall Bike Jesus.
There we go.
Had little ditties and dances with Jesus of nice. The tall bikes. It was glorious.
Nice.
Amen.
Save your sprocket or whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Right, of course we want you to come see the light, and that's what Tall Bike Jesus is helping you do. But, you know, he's not going to sit there and judge you for maybe driving your car to VeloCult and then doing a poem about your car.
Right.
You know, we wouldn't judge that per se. At least in front of your face.
Yeah.
I like to think of it as the Einstein theory here, as Einstein gained his theory of relativity by riding a bicycle. So not necessarily the theory of relativity is about bicycles, but
right.
It's inspired by the bicycles, and that's what our show is about.
Definitely.
Bicycles inspired by the bicycle.
Are the hub of many good things.
Right.
Nice. Both of you guys are from Portland, right? Or as far as like having been here for a while?
I'm Rocky Mountain style.
Okay.
A little bit.
Rocky Mountain high.
Rocky Mountain oysters.
Yeah.
Have you ever had those?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
So they're not popular in the Rocky Mountains?
It's one of
I
those...
try not to eat balls.
That's always a good policy.
Oh, you didn't tell me that.
Sorry, our relationship's just been
oh, wow.
disbanded because I don't eat balls.
Gosh, I thought there was hope for us.
It's what all this was leading towards, right? Dangerous.
So, I was born and raised in Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to me because I don't think of Portland's indigenous settlers, like the people who have been here for generations, I don't think of them as necessarily being bicycle-centric. Like most of the people I meet that are Portland's old stock are people who maybe they came from a lumberjack's family or something like this. And to have you actually born and raised here and still like bikes is interesting to me.
Well, I think it's interesting if you go back to the early 90s or into the 80s, bikes were of no bigger consequence than they were in any other city in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, I do think it is in my DNA. You know, my dad built a bike path in our neighborhood when I was a kid, and he won an award. I remember that was one of my proudest moments of my dad when I was about, I don't know, 8 or so, when he got this cork, this was cork with metal bicycles, like a high wheel bike, and he put it on in his room, and I thought that was really neat.
Yeah.
So it had a big impression on me. You know, he rode his bike a lot. I rode on the back of his bike. We rode bikes as kids. My grandfather rode a bike. They lived over not too far from here in the Woodstock neighborhood.
Okay.
And this is a great place for biking. I mean, it's flat and, you know, the good streets, a small grid system.
A lot of unpaved streets, if you like that sort of thing.
Yeah, you know. So it helps slow down traffic, I guess. But So I think that there has been some influence there. And then, you know, my grandfather had a trike. And so I think that's what influenced me perhaps to get the disco trike, which is an adult style trike.
Yeah.
You know,
can we bookmark that once we're done with the introductions? Because I want to talk about the disco trike a little bit.
Fuck yeah.
There's a lot of stuff going on with that. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Your grandpa had a trike that was it was just for mobility, kind of like getting around. He wanted to pedal himself his own places without the aid of a combustion engine.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah,
you know, and he'd have an umbrella and he'd be riding his trike around, you know. So
it's pretty fantastic.
Yeah. So there, it's yeah. Thanks. It's actually, that's yours.
Oh, no, okay. Good. Yeah. Good times.
And cheers.
Cheers. Yeah. Exactly. Old Crow cider and Aaron. I'm sorry, we didn't get you anything. Yeah.
I've got exciting water here.
Somebody needs to be sober. It's non-fluoridated, right?
So far.
I could add some fluoride if you want me to. I got toothpaste in my bag.
There you go. Stir it in.
That is the thing. That's the most troubling aspect of this whole fluoridation legislation that's being pushed through Portland right now is that they're going to take a bunch of toothpaste, just dump it right in. That's sad.
Just dump it in the reservoir.
It's going to be minty, I guess.
Exactly.
You know, why is it that pretty much any toothpaste that you buy has fluoride in it? When fluoride is only really useful to people who are about 10 years old and younger.
Hmm. You know? I was not aware of this. I don't know a whole lot about fluoride.
We need adult toothpaste.
We do. You grown know, up.
A new market.
You have to pay,
right here.
You have to pay twice as much for toothpaste that doesn't have fluoride in it.
Seriously, yeah. That's strange to me. I know triclosan was the other ingredient that I've always intrigued by. There's a big debate on the internet about whether or not it's good or not. And I remember my dentist always recommended that I get triclosan toothpaste because it does better at fighting the germs and whatnot. And then there was one of those forwarded emails that was printed out and brought into my workplace. Because everybody I work with is like 70 years old. And so they all say like, hey, we should learn about this. And they bring, you know, stacks of printed paper onto the table and say, read this email forward. Instead of actually forwarding it to you by email, they drop it on the table.
That's awfully nice of them.
Yeah, yeah. So that was how I learned that triclosan might actually be dangerous. But I don't know if it is or not. I have no idea. It seems like a Snopes thing.
Oh, totally. I was just going to say Snopes.com.
Yeah. Yeah. We should get them to sponsor the podcast. That'd be a useful sponsor.
Snopes should actually review the podcast.
Yeah, Sprocket Podcast, bullshit or not? Doesn't actually happen.
I don't think we fight cavities, I'll tell you that.
Seriously. We probably, with chocolate and liquor and alcohol. I'm sure there's a fair amount of sugar
liver
in.
Liver on.
Yeah.
Well, one of the concerns about fluoride for, just since we're on the subject, one of the concerns about fluoride is we've got a lot of brewers, microbrewers, home brewers, Fluoridated water is not good for brewing.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah. So that's all I need to know. You know, I'm voting no.
In a way, yeah, that's true. That's
for
really
the love
enough.
Of the beer.
That really is enough for a lot of people. It'd be enough for me, I think.
Yeah. Well, does that mean that they're going to have to start importing water for our beer?
Is
that,
or like distilling the water before,
right?
Before, yeah, adding it. Or
I'm only for distilleries if they produce alcohol. So
right,
yeah.
Right. The brewer, you know, you'll start seeing your brewmeister down the side of the Willamette, you know, getting some buckets of water and
exactly.
Back to the, you know, hub or
yes.
Bridgeport or wherever.
And I'm afraid of the day when we start making beer out of the Willamette. That just seems like a dangerous and sludgy prospect.
You know, I bet
they're
it
all
be so
stouts.
Bad.
It already looks like a stout. So, Zed, you said you're from the mountainous area, Colorado?
Blackfoot, Idaho.
Blackfoot, Idaho. Okay. Those are also the Rocky Mountains.
Indeed. Then I ventured down to the Salt City, Salt Lake City, Utah.
There we go.
And
what's that place like?
Kicked it with the Mormons.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen SLC Punk? It's a recommendation.
Yeah.
Is it, Aaron, you're familiar?
Yeah. It's actually kind of a sad movie.
It has its twists and turns, but basically the idea is that there's these tribes and everybody's a little bit extreme out there, and it's true. So you don't have just normal Mormons, you have raging Mormons, and you don't have just normal punk rockers or anarchists. You have balls of the wall anarchists that want to just like start the revolution. And so you have these really stark contrasts. And actually I just heard I keep hearing this quote that has the highest gay population per capita.
Yeah, I've heard about this. It's, like, it's a big
Salt
underground
Lake,
scene.
And I'm over there and I'm looking for the gay people. I'm like, where are you at, man? Where are you at?
Right.
I don't see that.
Interesting.
You're looking for some Rocky Mountain oysters. Oh,
right? Yeah.
Precisely.
Exactly. Oh, sorry, you don't do that. All right.
Yeah. No, that was like the central premise. I read this book called The 19th Wife. It was David Ebershoff, I think, was the author's name, but fascinating. Talking about polygamous families kind of hiding out in the hills and out in the valleys and mostly avoiding, I think, the ramifications of polygamy in today's society, but also the idea that a lot of guys get like kicked out because there's like not enough women to go around for all the dudes that they produce. And so you get all these guys that end up like bumming their way over to Provo or Salt Lake City. And it was fascinating. So that's, I have maybe an undue fascination with that. It's amazing.
What's striking about it is the bicycling culture out there. It's not anything like you expected. We actually have people that are just really tight-knit group out there. They have rides such as the 999 ride.
Oh, yeah?
It's every Thursday. It meets at night to night because they have a grid system like Portland. But
okay. Much bigger streets though, right?
And they get away with a lot more out there because it's still just like it's new.
Uh-huh.
And I hope this podcast doesn't go out to like some law enforcement and ruin that for them. I don't want to hurt the vibe of Salt Lake City bicycle culture here.
Seriously, I don't think anyone in law enforcement is listening to this show. I'm pretty sure.
All right, just
and if you are, you have to tell us. Otherwise, it's entrapment.
I love the idea of law enforcement listening to this podcast, actually, because that means they're not doing something else, right? They're fucking spending their time listening to us. Great.
Yeah, seriously. They're trying to get the line on what the bicyclists are up to. Jonathan Moss has this joke about how everyone assumes he has a red phone that he can just pick up and tell all the bicyclists in Portland what to do, which... I mean, it'd be fun if that was the case, but, you know, what can you do? So when did you come to Portland?
So what happened was Reverend Phil actually came out with the bike porn tour,
mm-hmm.
and it liberated all of us.
Okay.
We hadn't experienced that much sexuality in that city for years.
Sure.
I mean, behind closed doors, maybe, and in the underground.
I can't imagine. So just for context, Rev Phil, he's a historic character in the Portland bicycle scene.
Mentioned in last episode.
That's
too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I guess now if we say his name one more time, he has to appear, right? He has to show up in the studio.
No, you have to be in the bathroom mirror.
Okay.
Good thing he wasn't the drinking word. Let's just say that.
Seriously. That would have been fantastic.
It is.
But anyways, he has been doing things in town for a long time. More recently started making pornography featuring bicycles, right?
Correct.
That's kind of his bag these
days. So he came out there, and we had a Jim Kahana, which was a kids that kick off the little kids off the playground, and we do time trials on little tiny bikes.
That's really interesting.
Around it. Yeah, and but our big event that was brought because of Reverend Phil and the Bike Porn Tour crew, was tall bike jousting. We never tall bike jousted before that.
Yeah, and that's that's a niche. That.
And that's how Tall Bike Jesus was born, in fact.
Okay.
Was because this culture was originated all around this. Like,
uh-huh.
Reverend Phil seems to be our, like, a little tie-in, seriously, in so many ways. It's
right.
kind of weird.
Right. Well, he's like the most, probably the most mythic figure as far as I can think of in my time in Portland and my exposure to kind of what was happening in that. Like, he's kind of like the top name as far as, yeah. So
my first bikey video that I produced was Zubom, and he was there, you know.
Right.
And, you know, and he was the guy I interviewed who told me about what Zubom is and yeah. what it means. And
Zubombing, for anyone who doesn't know, is awesome.
Yeah, zoo bombing, you know, taking a kiddie bike up on the light rail up to the top of the steep hill in Portland and then riding down fast and getting back on and doing it over again. So basically the light rail is like your ski lift and your mini bike is your skis. You know,
right, or snowboard, as the case may be.
Jinx, yeah. you owe me a drink.
Oh, seriously, I owe you a Coke, yeah.
Yeah. no, you owe me some Coke.
There we go. Yeah. There is a difference.
Now the cops are listening.
Not that we would know anything about that. So
no, okay. I'm Coke free.
Simple enough.
You got free Coke?
Well, it's caffeine free.
Okay.
How did you guys then meet? It was probably through Reverend Phil, I guess. Is that's the thing? That's
Reverend Phil basically wanted some content for his bike pornography
okay.
show, and so he recommended that I go meet up with Dan. And that we produced the scene. And he wrote this big, huge script, and it was very elaborate. And
uh-huh.
me and Dan got together, and we're like, hey, how's it going? Hey, I'm Zed. Hey, I'm Dan, you know, kind of thing. And we're
it's
like,
exactly like that. Can we do that?
Hey, I'm Zed.
Hey, I'm Dan.
Hey. Exactly.
It's like I'm actually there.
Rev's script sucks. Let's write our own. I mean, it did. It really sucked.
So we started like rolling our creativity and figuring out things, and we're like, well, what would kind of work for this? And we caught up with this idea of, like, you know, the big oil and the drill baby drill kind of
those
motto.
Are yeah, yeah there's some obvious references to be made there.
And
and the spill was the spill was happening, right?
Dan kept I think it had happened.
I think the BP spill had or was happening.
And I actually just got from a spill, I think, during that time. I don't know if it was the same time period, but there was another spill that was in Salt Lake. They were happening all over the country.
Okay.
They
oil was
all
going
the
everywhere. It was just black crap everywhere.
Right.
There's a spill right now in a subdivision in Arkansas, in case you hadn't heard. It's a tar sands.
Oh.
Have you?
I haven't heard about this one. No.
It's really not in the news, but basically a whole neighborhood and a lake has been wiped out by tar sands.
Shit.
Yeah,
really?
By tar sand spill. And it is not in the news anywhere.
So, it's hard. Yeah, it's hard to avoid conspiratorial thought, I think, at this point.
I guess it's not newsworthy. You know?
Right.
So we met up, and then we're talking about this, and we're like, well, I did a lot of stop motion animation. In fact, I shared some of that with some of my earlier pieces, and we're like, let's use your Legos and do Lego porn.
Okay.
And
my kid's Legos.
Yeah, his kid's Legos. I don't have my own set.
sure.
And Dan kept telling me throughout this whole production, he's like, yeah, and then I'm going to have him do Lego sex. I was like, what's he talking about, man?
Legos are an inherently, like basically copulation is the way you play with Legos. So that kind of fits in some ways.
I couldn't see it, though. I didn't see the vision until
the
creation was made. But
okay.
We just had fun with Legos and porn and bicycles, and it was great.
Right. Well, let me throw this at you. Curves are sexy. Legos are like 90-degree angles. So how does that work together?
Well, you'll have to see Reverend Phil's bike porn, you know. And this is a video that there might actually be a way to find it on the internet somewhere, but we really haven't promoted it there.
Yeah, I feel like you'd have to sift through a lot of other stuff that
you know
might
if you
not
came
to
Open Bike
to.
And you said that you wanted to see the bike porn video, we'd probably play it for you.
Okay.
So
by request
it's kind of something that we show live because it's special.
Mm-hmm.
You
know? Yeah, but you have to know, like,
a special moment for
the secret phrase or whatever.
Secret handshake.
Okay. Well, Lego bike porn. That's
okay.
All I got to say.
That's a good secret phrase. Okay. Yeah, nice. So
apparently it's big in Amsterdam.
Really?
Yeah. It was, according to Phil, it was the biggest of all the movies that they played. It got the most love, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Legos are unique. And anything done with Legos is inherently, it's colorful because you got to do like the bright primary colored blocks.
Yep.
And a few non-primary colors. Are there non-primary colored Legos? I'm sure there are.
Oh, yeah.
Green is not a primary color. I always thought it was.
Well, basically, the quick synopsis of the story is you've got the oil rig blows up, spews oil, and a beast comes out of the oil. You know, very comic book like, right? And then comes out, and then you've got people stuck in a traffic jam, right? They're you know,
well voiced,
talking on their cell phones, you know. Hating life, stuck in a traffic jam, and then they get devoured by this beast, which is a Lego dinosaur.
Okay.
And, you know, they're little Lego people. You've
right,
seen them, right?
Yeah, with the little heads.
Right. And then the beast eats a bunch of people, and then a Lego team, a boy-girl team come
Bicycle
in and save the
power
day.
Power engage!
Yeah. Form of the Battle Axe of Fury.
I'll fuck you with my bicycle. I'll fuck you with my bicycle.
Yes. Those are some of the lines straight out of the video. And then they defeat Big Oil and the oil monster, and then they you know, and then of course that makes them horny, just like it would anybody, right?
Right, right.
Sure. Yeah, anytime I defeat a big giant oil monster, I really need to get laid afterwards.
Sure.
It just makes
well,
sense.
Well, nothing turns people on like defeating Big Oil.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
And partially because it's just so hard to defeat, but
right,
we're
right.
working on it.
Well, yeah, I guess that there's an inherent amount of excitement that goes along with that. So,
yeah,
That's fascinating.
And that's the premise of the movie. And you know, like I said, if you ask nice, we'll show it to you.
Okay, yeah. There we go. Nice. So, what is the next? What are you guys working on at present? What is the future? The immediate future of your projects or things that you're up to?
So we just finished a Midnight Mystery Ride that we did together.
We referenced this in the last episode, actually. It was the magical
Midnight Mystery Tour.
Okay, yeah.
It was based off the, well, I'll let Dan talk about it because it's his childhood favorite.
Okay.
Oh, well, I just had an album, a giant album. It was actually not the album cover, but like a giant sized version of it. And I was like, hey, I'm going to toss this out. Do you want it? And then that spurred Zed on to say, hey, we need a magical mystery ride, and I'm going to do it next month or whatever. And I'm like, no, don't do it next month. I can't do it next month. And you can't do Magical Mystery Ride without me on it because that's my favorite album, and I love it. You know. So we co-led the ride, which is kind of breaking the rules, I suppose.
Right.
Okay, yeah.
So we found this mix from this artist out of Salt Lake City called DJ Wonka. And it's Yellow Dubmarine, and it's a bunch of Beatles song done to dubstep. And
interesting.
It could be a complete disaster.
Sure.
Given, you know.
Sounds like most a disaster.
People, people have hashed it, but this. Wait for the drop. This was beautiful. And
exactly.
It was perfect. And, you know, from result from this, from playing this and keeping in contact with this person, in fact, from this ride, I'm actually hoping to get him out here. So this artist.
Okay.
And so what I like to do, this is kind of my place within this whole bicycle scheme things, is combining local music, music from far and far, people I know, like local ground roots music, and put it into bicycle.
Okay.
So that's kind of where my other moniker came from, DJ the Bike Sexual, is I like to just like...
Nice.
Present new kind of music from local artists.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what that was my idea with the Magical Midnight Mystery Tour, was to introduce people to a new artist that they never heard of that they'd be blown away by. And
okay.
It worked really well.
Yeah.
And it was definitely in my top five or top three Midnight Mystery Rides for sure. The weather was perfect. We had a view of Portland. Zed just found them like the most awesome location, close in but totally private. We had some firewood, we had great fires that night.
So since it already happened, can you disclose this location,
the location
for us? Yeah.
Or do we need to save it
or do you want to keep it a secret that like in case
sad.
You want
to
use
it again?
It
might
be something
we want in our back pocket.
Yeah,
I don't
that's
know.
That's true.
It was around Selwood.
Okay.
Well, all right. Except across the river.
Right.
Yeah.
That's our mystery.
That's as far as we'll go.
So did you guys cross the Selwood Bridge?
We did.
I was going to say, right. The Selwood Bridge is as far as many people
go. Yeah, we took the lane,
you
man.
You must have lost some people at that point. I don't know. Like, I've done the mystery ride a couple times, and one time we crossed the Selwood Bridge, and as we're going across, there's a couple people that just went, oh, hell no. And they turned their bike, they turned their bike right around.
I ain't doing that.
No, not the Selwood Bridge.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, because you don't know where you're going to wind up. Yeah, that's true. I can see that. But no, we hadn't gone very far at that point, and we didn't go too much further. And it was just a perfect night, perfect yeah. place, and friends and music, and we were loud and rowdy, and it went, apparently, I mean, it outlasted Zed and I. I mean, I hate to admit it, but, you know, it went till dawn, apparently.
It was great when we did the leader change. I think that was my most favorite part of the entire ride.
Yeah, so did you do the write-up, Zed? Was that, because there was something that came out afterward kind of describing the goings-on of the ride.
Yeah, yeah, I did it, and then I co-opted it with Dan here.
Okay,
so.
Yeah.
Basically, there's this part where right before we entered into the Springwater Quarter, where I got up on a pillar and I was like, I am no longer your leader. He's the walrus now. He's the walrus. Follow him. Coo-coo-ca-choo. Coo-coo-ca-choo.
Right.
It was really yes. great. And it was beautiful because all these people were coming up to me and like, that's never happened. I've been riding on Midnight Mystery Tour for years and I've never seen anything like this. This is beautiful.
A leader gives up their right to lead to someone else.
It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need to see more of that, you know.
That's very interesting. So the Midnight Mystery
Especially
Ride.
If they give up their leadership to me. You know?
It's true enough. True enough. As all should. the Midnight Mystery Ride, if I'm not mistaken, has been going through kind of a dry spell recently. It seemed like there was kind of a scramble to find new ride leaders. There wasn't a lot of momentum. It just seemed to me like I think the first one I went on was kind of in the middle of that period where it wasn't that no one wanted to do it, but yeah. But it was just really hard to find people to organize rides and to get that thing going. So you guys doing something like this and kind of injecting a shot of awesomeness
into the arm
of the Midnight Mystery Ride, that was a good high five. Caught perfectly between the two microphones. I think that's kind of the thing that needs to happen is kind of almost a, not a passing of the torch because you guys have been around for a while, but yeah.
Just sort of a rethinking and, mm-hmm. and
so
reinventing or
I actually
re-energizing,
brought this-
yeah.
I brought this ride back to Salt Lake City,
uh-huh.
and I redid it for a while. And I think it kind of died out, but it was cool when we started because we had capes. We had the Midnight Mystery cape, and it would be to the theme of the ride. We have themed. Every ride was themed.
Okay.
And so the first ride was just like wild and zany, so I brought this cape out. And then what happened at the ride is we got to the end location. They were really small rides. We'd hand the cape off to the next person. It was like the case of the traveling pants or something like that.
Very nice.
And then they would add their own little insignia to the cape according to what the theme was. So the next one was like Fiesta Under the Sea. So this guy did a poncho and he had a little piece of my cape to it. And we continued the inspiration on. And it was pretty amazing, the concept. I just really like the idea of remixing things and not necessarily reinvent the wheel, but making the wheel work better.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And as a DJ, that's almost like inherent into the job is kind of mixing things and changing them around and
right.
taking something familiar and making it interesting by adding new elements. And yeah. Nice. Very nice. I was just interested. I was intrigued. And Aaron, stop me if you got anything that comes to mind for you. I'm just going to start throwing questions out.
Okay. Go for
it. But Dan, you're kind of famous for almost having an evangelical tone about the need to move away from oil dependence.
Yeah, you know, I consider myself a bike evangelist, mm-hmm. you know, and
hallelujah.
Yeah. It's fascinating to me to hear it preached with such, if I can say that, with such vigor and such conviction, because it seems like a lot of people are making the argument saying like, this is something we have to do, but it comes out kind of sounding dry. And you have this emotion that is infused into every presentation that you give. Every time you talk about like, hey, this is something that we need to think seriously about. It comes out as though you actually believe it and you actually mean it. So
yeah, I mean, and I'm a hypocrite too. And I'll admit it right now. I mean, I have a minivan that gets 17 miles to the gallon.
Aren't we all, right?
You know? And I believe that that's a big part of how we've built our system.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it really, you know, very difficult to not use automobile infrastructure.
Right.
You know, you're actually going to put yourself at a disadvantage if you want to take such a hardcore stand. I believe that, you know, we live within, you know, this is like a family that we're in, this whole species of the human, right?
This thing called life
is a plant, is this family, or perhaps our country is a family, our state is a family, our city, whatever. They're like families, and we build up infrastructures. And of course, all families are dysfunctional.
Mm-hmm.
And our dysfunction, you know, we've got numbers of dysfunctions. I mean, and we could go after any of them. But I do look at our dependence upon oil and our dependent on our whole transportation system is very dysfunctional.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be fixed. Now, it doesn't start with one person going, oh, I'm just walking everywhere from now on and riding my bike. It starts with us getting together collectively and say, we want to do it better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, and you know, it's a catchphrase from Zubom. I mean, that is the slogan of Zubom. Do it better.
Do it better.
Yeah. You know, and that's the thing is people, you know, go, oh, well, you know, you're this Columbia sportswear jacket's made out of petroleum,
made
or
of oil. So
you
are
know,
my pants.
Whatever. Or the oil on my chain is petroleum. You know, it's just like, no, we can do it better. Don't try to end the story and just like give up and take the easy way out. We can do it better. No, we can do it better.
Mm-hmm.
It's silly to think otherwise. And people give up. You know, you hear people go, well, yes, we need to move away from oil, but it's going to take 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no,
that's too long.
That's a cop out. We can't do that. We don't
fuck it,
need
I'm leasing
to,
a Hyundai.
That's right.
You know, we can do it better. Again, once again, we can do it better. And I think we will. We have to push towards it. And, you know, I work within the framework of my family, the city, my own personal family, the country, the nation, the world. But I am definitely pushing for something better, and I know we can. And if, you know, as soon as we come up with that solution, solar energy and, you know, infinite energy coming out of your wall, well, we'll have a whole new problem to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a problem I want to find out and get there to that.
I think it's great working with Dan because he has this very serious tone, and he has the baritone voice, as mentioned on Bike Portland.
A rich baritone, yeah.
The rich baritone voice.
We're really not doing you guys justice with the
microphone.
Kind of
scratchy today. Yeah. Plus, you gave me the bad mic.
What's sorry about that.
You got to compensate. I got to sound better than you a little bit. Or at least equal, right? But my perspective of bicycle culture is that it needs to be fun. Now, we're not Copenhagen. We don't pretend to be. We're not going to have the same numbers. But I still think that we are the pedal party capital of the world.
Here, here.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and we need to bring that. And so I feel like when we go out on rides, when we're advocating, leave no one behind. I see so many rides where there's new people getting involved with it, and they're leaving people behind.
Boo.
You know?
No drop rides are the
no,
best.
No bicycle left behind. And this is a system that actually will work instead of just a political phrase that's brought upon
or people judging people for coming to the naked bike ride, like driving their bike to the naked bike ride. Oh, that's
boo.
So awful. No, fuck that. No, bring them to the naked bike ride. I don't care how you get there. Fucking helicopter in, for Christ's sake.
Just ride your bike. Yeah. Seriously.
Once right. You're on the naked bike ride.
Yeah. Right, right. It's not the naked car drive, because that would be boring.
Very boring.
Yeah. So, the idea that making things fun, like you have to have both the gravitas of like this is a serious issue, and also like we can't take ourselves too seriously. Otherwise, we're all going to be very sad.
Well, look at the numbers here. I mean, it's not just the weather, but it's the fact that all these people are coming out because they want to have bikey fun. I mean, June's overwhelming for a cyclist. You have 300 plus bicycle rides going on.
Pedalpalooza.
For Pedalpalooza within this period of time. And it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. I actually just talked with somebody that you're going to be talking with, I think, in the future about making an app for Pedalpalooza.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we can't talk about who that is or any of the details yet. But
I won't talk about the details.
Of course not.
But my point is that people are getting excited about the fun aspect.
Wait
of
a second.
It.
I want to talk about code for a while. Can we do that?
Are you guys like really conversing in C?
0111100011.
Binary solo.
I'm sorry.
I think there's this spark that's being lit. There's a lot of people that are getting burned out, but there's also this spark that's being lit that's being igniting passions of cyclists in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of people get burned out, but I'm also seeing a lot of people picking up that place.
Right.
One person I think in particular about this is Chris Fool, who has been the facilitator for Shift to Bikes meetings for years and years and years and he's finally trying to pass his torch off and. You know, we're trying to facilitate that with our open bike.
Okay.
Actually having it at the same time so we can start dialogue and get things rolling. And I feel like there's just like so much inspiration out there and there's so many passionate artists. They just need to be ignited.
Yeah.
And I imagine, I think that's that's one of the, I don't know, results or benefits of leaving nobody behind or leaving no bike behind is you get these people who were like maybe just curious at first, and then they see things with new eyes, and then they inject new energy into something that maybe was either dying or just getting stagnant. Yeah, I think that's one of the ways that's going to help us be like the bike party capital, you know, of the
pedal
world.
Party. I think it's
the pedal party. Thank
it's
you.
Catchy.
Sorry.
I'm coining it.
Yeah. And bike curiosity. I like that pedal party capital of the world.
Pedal party. We right. are because we. I mean, I've heard a lot of cyclists get down on us because they say, "Oh well, Europe has this infrastructure, but they don't know how to party like we know how to party." You know what I'm saying? There's nothing like Pedalpalooza around. I mean, there's people who try to attempt it,
right?
But we hold it.
Oh, and you were talking about Copenhagen. I never think of Copenhagen as a place where people are just like, "Woo!"
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of great things to emulate, but I feel like the whole like the Northern European thing is basically like, you know, darkness and sadness, and it doesn't have to be that way, and it isn't always, but that's, I think there's more of that than there is here, maybe if due to latitude, if nothing else. So we're doing okay, I think, and I'm very inspired by kind of the things that I've seen over the past several years, and the way that Pedalpalooza continues to build and grow, and the same groups of people that are organizing those rides year round are doing very interesting things. So,
you know, bike fun is key. I mean, that is what is going to get young people involved. That's what's going to, I think, you know, you may start your biking, like for me, it was a protest against the Iraq War. I started biking seriously in 2002 when I saw the run up to the war. Mm-hmm. And
that's so much more noble than my reason. I'm just cheap.
That is kind of that is the story for so many of us, though, too. I mean, I was cheap, and that was why I started. I had no other option. I couldn't afford anything else, so I finally,
exactly.
at rock bottom, said, I'll ride my bike to work.
Yeah, but my 74 Dart was, you know, although the gas mileage...
Wait, you had a 74 Dart?
Yes, I did.
I had a 73 Dart.
It's a great car, and it's pretty cheap except for the gas. Yeah.
Slant but, 6?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. It was the, oh, no, take that back. It was a 314 V8.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It had some muscle, you know.
I had a Plymouth that was like, it was like riding a horse.
I love that.
We're not supposed to be talking about this. It's all oil.
Let's talk about cars. I love muscle cars. I will just say that. I love muscle cars. I will always have a soft spot for muscle cars.
Yeah.
And they were great in the 60s and early 70s.
Totally.
And then, you know, USA hit peak oil. And we had a gas crisis, and, you know, Carter put solar panels on the roof of the White House, and that was our opportunity to make a change in terms of our energy infrastructure, and we chose not to. Mm-hmm. We elected Ronald Reagan because, you know, of course, that was the easier way out.
Reaganomics, baby.
Yeah.
Get your Reagan.
It's worked well. Trickle down. I feel trickled on, you know.
Seriously. Yeah, it's very similar, but there are differences.
So I do feel like bike fun is an entry point, and I do feel like ultimately you keep biking because it's fun, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
That's why I like it. And even when it's pouring down rain, 40 degrees outside, you keep biking because it's fun.
It was striking because in the newspaper, I think it was the Willamette Weekly, don't completely quote me on that, but it was one of these local papers, and they have these articles that they bring out about people that give up their cars for a week because their editor made them do it.
Oh, right.
And
yeah,
how
that
painful
was
it is.
The cover story, I think, of this last week's
And I wrote an editorial into this, and I was like, this is ridiculous. Let's do an article about a cyclist that gives up their bike for a week and drives a car and says how miserable it is.
This is
and how
fucking awful.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm stuck in this commute. I can't move. What am I going to do?
I think
I'm going to go back to my bike.
Yeah,
I don't know how to.
I'm sick of those articles. They're kind of trite.
Right.
I don't know how to get around in this town without using the Springwater Trail. I cannot drive on this thing.
I'm unfamiliar with the arterials. Yeah.
No, it's true. I mean, I've had this cold the last couple of weeks, and I've been driving a lot more, and it's just horrible. It's just depressing. I, you know, driving more than I'd like to.
Mm-hmm.
And probably shouldn't be. That's probably why I'm not, you know, winning on this thing. But, you know, ultimately, I think that we can, with cycling, is a better solution. But we have to make some serious strides in our infrastructure. And I do feel like we've stagnated there. So, you know, City of Portland, you know, now we're pushing for a Columbia River crossing. Now we're pushing for more parking spaces for buildings that are, you know, new buildings that are going up. It's just like, whoa, wait a second. We're moving backwards
Welcome
now.
Welcome back, 1950.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Yeah. And, you know, you've got vested interest who, you know, like the Oregonian, who want to, you know, keep us stuck in this whole sprawl mentality, the car culture, that whole thing. Folks, okay, if you're listening to this right now, it is over. Peak oil happened. It's like happened years ago. Peak oil has happened.
It's not a question of whether or not.
Gas prices are going to go up. Okay, there's still a whole lot of oil left in the ground. I realize that, but it's getting way more expensive to get it out. Mm-hmm. The amount of oil that it takes to get out a gallon of oil, it takes more than a gallon of oil to get out a gallon of oil. Okay, so think about that. Yeah. It just don't work.
Right.
And the fact that fracking exists as a process to get oil is more than proof.
Like it
that
shouldn't
we
be.
Have, yeah, that we've... We're kind of scratching the bottom of the barrel.
Tar sand, shale extraction, deep water mining. Of course, it's all way more polluting. It's all way more intensive, and it's way more expensive. But of course, there's, you know, these companies that own major shares in this production. They own the rights
and legislature that own major shares in these companies.
Absolutely. So that's what we're fighting against, and it's a big uphill battle. And you've got these sprawling cities. You know, bicycles, pedestrians, and public transit do not work well in a sprawling city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's what we're fighting against. And it's a big uphill battle. But you know, I think inertia is actually going to be what helps us win this thing.
I got a good sound insert right here.
Yeah,
Enter the Haggis, Gasoline. Basically, it's a song. This is my shameless plug. It's
nice.
A good band. Cars and trucks and gasoline. Then they came upon the scene, and it talks about how these automobiles structure entered into it, and the world was green and beautiful, and then it just got polluted and shitty.
Uh-huh.
Kind of what we're facing right now in a lot of ways. And it's an amazing song, and it's striking the view it presents. That's my little DJ.
Thank you.
Shameless plug. Thank
you. Yeah, mixing
Thank
it in. So what's it called again? Enter the Haggis?
Enter the Haggis Gasoline.
Okay.
So, yeah, check it out. It's a good band. They're like Scott, Irish, punk, Celtic mix.
It's a good mix.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
I like that.
Enter Sandman, enter Haggis.
It's very similar.
You going to play us a song, D?
No, but I'm ready.
Hey, man, any old time.
I get excited for your songs.
Yeah, any old time.
Well, you know,
Dinosaurs Bite.
Well,
that's a good lead-in right now.
Okay, cool.
Okay,
do it. I liked that one from
and
Open Bike.
Actually, before we start, do you want to point your mic kind of at his guitar? You don't have to move it; just like point it at it, so we'll pick up some more of that. Yeah, thank you.
Can you swear in this one too?
Yeah, go for it.
It's a podcast. We can say whatever we want, right?
Whatever the fuck you want, please do.
Get angry, man. Get angry.
All right, you got to forgive me. My voice is really thrash. But... Dinosaurs bite. Dinosaurs bite. Dinosaurs tussle now. And dinosaurs fight. Some dinosaurs eat plants, the one over there eats meat. Well, you better get running on your dinosaur feet, because dinosaurs bite. Dinosaurs bite! A dinosaur stuck in the ground. That's a dinosaur's plight. Well, they used to roam the earth, the sky and the sea. No, we dig them from the ground so we all can see. You know that dinosaurs bite. Dinosaurs bite. Dinosaur mite. That makes a dinosaur right. Well, the Earth got hit by a big asteroid. There wasn't one damn thing they could do to avoid. The lakes got hot and they started to boil. Now we pump them from the ground to get our crude oil. You know that dinosaurs bite. Dinosaurs bite. Drinking dinosaur fuel. That's our dino delight. And when you're driving your car and drinking your gasoline and you're choking on the fumes, you'll know what I mean. When the glaciers all melt and the oceans do rise. Well, I hope it don't come as a fucking surprise, because dinosaurs bite. Dinosaurs bite.
Thank you, sir. Well done.
I think it was more impressive that you're sick and you did that. I felt it, like,
yeah,
the power of it. Like, yeah, I gotta do this.
There's some more inherent angst, I think, built into the voice when it's actually strained. You know, and, good job. Thank you, sir.
Cheers.
You gotta chase that with the whiskey, right?
Yeah,
that was fantastic. Yeah. I'm curious, Dan, as far as just musically, I know you've infused a lot of your video projects with your own music over the years. So what's your musical background?
Well, I was a bass player professionally in my 20s and early 30s or 30s, and had bands and played reggae, blues, rock and roll, jazz. And then I quit. I had a real good paying, you know, job, and went that route. Plus, I had kids and needed to support them. And after my second kid came along, I gave up playing in bands and stuff. And, you know, you've heard the story. And delighted to have my children because they're awesome and would make that trade any day of the week. But I couldn't trade music. Music is in me, and I can't stop it from getting out. So I picked up a guitar, and because bass, you know, let's say you got a kid in diapers on the floor, you know, you can be thumping around on the bass, but it's just really not an instrument you sing and play to on its own. It's an ensemble instrument. So I picked up guitar about then, 2002, and started writing songs. You know, and,
nice.
That's where we're at, and so now. I do, you know, I eventually moved into the video production and audio production business. I was originally planning on kind of doing what you're doing here with the mixer and audio for music and that kind of thing. And that was right about, again, around the time MP3s were kind of taking over the world. And I saw the writing on the wall and thought, well, video might be the way to go.
Right.
Video podcasting, actually.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Did you ever call it vodcasting?
I did.
Okay.
In fact, I actually own the domain vodcast.com.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's one of those words that's kind of like cyber, I think. Like it's not a bad word. It's just like it kind of has tinges of a certain era.
Yeah.
You can make a great porn site out of that.
Yeah. Right, right.
It's spelled V-A-U-D, vodcast. It was vaudeville.
Oh, okay. Yes. Oh, that actually, that's way better.
That's like vintage porn. I like that.
Right. Yeah. Burlesque cast.
You know, it's funny because I would do lots of videos of bands and I would record them and shoot the video. And you know, it would be like a great performance. And I get 50 views or something like that.
Right.
And I'd be like, wow, really? And then I'd do something on bikes like Zoo Bombing or Naked Bike Ride and, you know, hundreds and hundreds of views or thousands of views, you know. And I was like, okay, I love bikes. I'd already gotten into bikes. And then I was able to put music on top of it, and it's a dream come true. And, you know, I love doing travel and tourism and anything bike-oriented, bike-related, bike industry. I love that, and that's kind of my dream job. Zed helps me out with so much, with graphics and websites ideas, photography. He's a great photographer.
A renaissance man.
And video. Oh, total renaissance man. So, you know, and helps and helps just bolster my spirits when it needs to happen. You know, it's when you're, you know, in a creative business, it's kind of sometimes a hard road.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a lot of ups and downs. You'll have a great gig and you love it and you're like, oh, my dream job, and I'm pinching myself for this, and then, you know, you try to make ends meet too sometimes.
Right, right. And that's the constant struggle between art and profit, I guess. Trying to make both of those things happen without compromising the other. It's a tough road to walk, I suppose.
It is. And, you know, there is a part too where art just needs to happen for its own sake, and I really believe in that. So there's art, and then there's craft, and there's the combination of those two things, you know.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not a big judger. Right? People got to do what they got to do. You know?
Right, right.
And
Katy Perry needs a job too.
I'm not sure who fair? She is, but yeah.
That's okay.
Oh, that makes it even better.
Zed, as far as music for you, how long have you been at, is it turntablism? Is that the correct term?
I kind of make shift on the bicycle, honestly.
Okay.
I've done some stuff with Audacity.
Okay.
I'm not quite as physiqued, I don't know the exact terminology, as Dan over here in many ways. I have a different kind of ear.
Okay.
with the music. I don't play any instruments in particular. I like to do mixes, mm-hmm. and just kind of bring it. And that started from back in Salt Lake City. And it's kind of interesting because we both started about the same time with his Crank My Chain. I started something called Salt Cycle out in Salt Lake City.
Nice.
Which is essentially the Bike Portland of Salt Lake City.
Okay.
And when it started, it was just me blogging and bitching about stuff about bicycling. Mm-hmm. And then it grew and it grew and it grew. And now they're getting about 5,000 to 10,000 hits a month.
Wow.
On this site. And they have their own cycling team. And from that, we actually even created a gallery, too, out in Salt Lake. So it just it exploded.
Mm-hmm.
But Salt Lake City seemed too small for me, so I moved out here. And
right. Yeah. Yeah. How tied in are you to what's happening there now? I'm sure, the internet makes it possible to kind of stay updated. Like, you can subscribe via RSS or what have you.
Yeah. I've really tried to block it out a little bit because I've had struggles coming between here and Salt Lake. I really want to make it here.
You want to own this place as a place that you live and the place you're invested in.
I see a lot of people, and I see the struggle happen a lot in Portland. It's difficult to get work. It's difficult to make it here. And a lot of people think of this as kind of like their side vacation. Like, it's their little never-never land, and then they have to go back to the real world.
Dream of the 90s. Right.
It's so true.
And we have to go back to our real place, but I want to make this my real place. This
right.
Is, yeah. This is the only place I feel truly accepted. 100%.
That's another fantastic high five in between the mics. Thank you.
Exactly. I've seen that time and time again. Like, I'll dress up a certain way and people will actually compliment me instead of giving me weird ass looks and talking behind my back.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's a different world out here, and it's meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's really meant to be. And yeah. I see that again and again.
So maybe the conservatism of Salt Lake City made it easy to be like super committed and super passionate about being different. But maybe that gets old after a while. Like
you have to always be on fire there. And then people, I actually was told by somebody, I said, cause I was so passionate about, political change and things like that and getting my ideas heard. And they said to me, you need to go to San Francisco, man.
Yeah.
And I was like, you don't fit in here. I was like, but I'm needed here. And I have no regrets for the time I spent in Salt Lake City, but I feel like I've come to a point where I need to expand myself. And this has happened to so many people. Mm-hmm. Tony Piera is a perfect example of this with his frame building. I mean, he said he came out here because of a different situation, but it seems like we have this flock of cyclists come out here. It's not just people, hipsters and Portlandians, you know?
Right.
It's people that really just want to embrace a bicycle culture. And I'm here to say we have a place for you here.
Mm-hmm.
Come out here. Don't just sit on your ass and do nothing. Do it better. Do it better than me.
Yeah.
And that's what we said about that Midnight Mystery Ride when we held it. We said, you know what? This is a great ride. We feel like we're doing a good job. But if you could do it better, then do it better.
Totally. Yeah. You guys know Steph Routh and Ed. They just moved out to our neck of the woods out here. And on the move by bike, after we were eating food and drinking beer, I met a guy who had moved here from Colorado. And I believe, Dan, he was familiar with your work. And I suppose implicitly, the two of you, your collective work. But said he moved here for the bicycle culture, which I think is very cool. I think in one way, that's kind of how we can make some change is when there's a bit of a mass that's big enough to affect social change, like votes in the ballot box or that sort of thing.
I was thinking we could move the cyclists to Portland, and we could move all the motorists to Houston, Texas.
That could work.
that's my big scheme of plans.
They've got room for them over there.
They do.
Yeah. Well, I guess the other thing to consider is just that you're not going to become a barista if you move to this town, because that's like a pro game here. And you probably won't even get to work at a bike shop if you like bikes, because there's a ton of people working in bike shops already. But if you're willing to be creative, there are many ways to make a good living in this town if you're creative and committed to it and ready to stick it out. So I think, I'm not going to call it a utopia by any means, because every place has its problems. You move here, you just accept a different set of problems. But at the same time, I think there is something to be said for like joining people who have similar values as you, and yeah, and doing it better that way.
I was going to say on that line, I actually just introduced a t-shirt design called the Bikesexual.
Ah.
And it's basically the bicycle symbol with male female symbols in it.
There we go.
And
I'm surprised that hasn't been done yet.
I haven't seen it, so
yeah.
I'm introducing that line, actually.
Copyright
so.
2013, Zed Bailey.
It's copyright.
There we go.
And working with Dan's has actually been a big inspiration for getting that idea out, and a lot of my ideas, I feel like we kind of bounce off each other and do creative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where the Lego bike porn thing came from. That's
right.
Where the mystery. And we hope to... I'm not guaranteeing this, but we talk in inklings that we might be doing something for Pedalpalooza. But
there we go. Yeah.
Possible.
But we better get on it before all the dates are filled up. You know. By the way, that's shift2bikes.org.
You know, it'd be really cool if there was an app for that, and I could download that for my.
Can we talk about coding for a second?
I can only hope.
0011.
I have no idea who would do something like that, but I certainly hope that it gets made.
Man, there's so many shameless plugs going on in this podcast.
Shameless amorphous plugs.
I love it.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, we got a piece of mail that we're going to read.
Sure.
And
I was thinking we could come back to DiscoTrike.
Oh, right. We haven't even talked about the DiscoTrike yet.
We did not.
Yeah.
I've been sitting on this for a while. Trike.
Well, fuck. Let's do the DiscoTrike first.
We got to do DiscoTrike.
Yeah. Dan.
Oh, sorry. Is that the question? DiscoTrike? Question mark. DiscoTrike. You know, I had a dream about a trike that was like the Pied Piper, right? Riding around with music.
Yeah.
And then I went to Burning Man, and there it was, a guy riding his trike, and he had a generator, and he had music blasting out of the back of his trike. And I was like, I went up to the guy, I was like, dude, you're my dream. I mean, I had you in a dream.
Burning Man dreams.
Yeah. And then, no, this is pre-Burning Man dreams. You know, people talk about Burning Man dreams. And so this is 2006. I saw that. I couldn't believe it. I went home and I vodcasted on it. And,
nice.
You know, and then Kirsten, my lovely wife and life partner, she was driving down the street. She saw a trike on the side of the road and at a secondhand shop, and it had been misassembled. It was $60, brand new, but not functioning because it was misassembled. And that was the DiscoTrike. I painted it gold, powder coated it, actually.
What was the original color?
It was blue.
There we go.
It was okay. I mean, it looked okay, but
gold
it wasn't the,
better.
You know, but we called it the DiscoTrike right off the bat, and it was straight out of my dream. And, you know, we throw my bass amplifier in the back with a battery inverter powered thing, and it's loud as hell.
Yeah.
So loud that the Portland police have decided to arrest me on it and hassle me about it.
How many times has that happened?
Hassling or arresting?
Well, the arrest, there's one notable possession of it that took place by the Portland police.
Yeah. So I was surrounded by mounted police and then attacked by bicycle police.
Wow.
Yeah.
Multimodal.
Yeah, it really was multimodal. And I mean, and it's funny too, because it was like they were totally gearing to fight me. And I was like, okay, dudes, you got me. I will comply. You know?
Right. And you were just thumping Bob Marley, right?
I'm thumping some Bob Marley and maybe some Donna Summers. I'm not sure which at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, I wasn't thumping anything at the time, but they got me for previous Bob Marley, I think it was.
Okay.
You know, and
it's just too
previous
chill.
Previous Bob Marley.
I won in court, by the way, but I was arrested and detained. I didn't actually have to do any time.
That's good.
Except for about 30, 40 minutes in handcuffs.
Mm-hmm.
And this was for a protest during the Occupy era. And so that, you know, the DiscoTrike brings good-hearted, good-spiritedness, you know. There was a riot kind of happening one time when I showed up. And it was a police riot, as I would like to call it.
Like it was happening because the police were there?
Yeah, the police have decided they're going to clear out a park, and they're all full of themselves and their riot gear and billy clubs. And they're pushing folks out who are trying to do a reoccupation. And it's like kind of a head-to-head, a frontline assault kind of thing, and I pulled up, and I'm blaring Funky Town, and
which is
all
pretty
of a
great.
Sudden, everybody just pulls out of they pull off the fight, and we all start dancing in the street, and then we just paraded around the city for the next 3 or 4 hours, wound back up in the same park at the end of the night, and then took it over for the night, and it was like 30 degrees, and so everybody went home, and there you go. It's just kind of like, you know, if you never inserted the fucking police in the first place, people would have just gotten cold and gone home anyway, you know.
It's kind of a revitalization of
and we would have saved so many tax dollars from that.
I think it was striking during the court case when Dan got up and they asked him what he was playing. He said, "I play the classics." And they're like, "What are the classics? What are the classics, Dan?"
Oh, you know, Diana Ross and the Bee Gees. Sure. You know.
That's pretty great.
And, my favorite part was when they asked the sergeant, what he was playing. And he said, Bob Marley. Yeah. You know, it's the Disco Trike, though, isn't just about a political protest. It's the Disco Trike is a live broadcast unit. I can mm-hmm. do live streaming from it. I can play music. I can do public address. I can shoot. I do a lot of video production off of the Disco Trike. It's a great kind of a dolly, if you will. I can hold my camera and roll along and shoot stuff with it.
Right, right.
It's got a lot of... it's got a lot of versatility because it's so stable and it can hold a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. And I can pull trailers with it, too.
Yeah.
And it can be loud. And actually, we're looking to, I'm sure Pedalpalooza, you will see the Disco Trike. It'll be out there.
I'm going to have to keep my eyes open on this one.
Absolutely. It's just a ton of fun. You know, and then we did the Naked Bike Ride. A couple of years ago, 2011, I did a little video on that, and I rode the Disco Trike around with my camera and my guitar, played my song, Naked Bike Ride. We definitely want to pimp Naked Bike Ride.
That's coming up, yeah.
It is. World Naked Bike Ride.
There's actually a pre-Pedalpalooza ride at the end of this month.
Is that right?
That's correct.
I'm going to have to get on that, I think.
Pedalmashup.blogspot.com is okay. What I reserved for
Excellent.
That.
We will thank you, Aaron, for annotating that. I just swear this is the best thing that's ever happened. Aaron is starting to take notes on what happens, which is really helpful because I have one hell of a time trying to remember all the things that we talk about and what needs to be linked to. So
yeah, well, most of it is just me. I think finally coming to terms with my own age and lack of memory. So this... realizing I got to write these things down,
right? Right.
So then I can relive them once I'm senile.
Exactly.
So
that's
this
not
ride
a bad idea.
Is basically. A mashup of all the best rides of Pedalpalooza that everybody enjoys, like the David Bowie ride. And you dress up as your theme, as your favorite ride.
Perfect.
So I want some of you favorited World Naked Bike Riders to come out naked for me.
It's not illegal in Portland.
We're also going to be shooting a All the Apparatus music video.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be promoting Pedalpalooza for that. Oh, they have a Let's Go Ride Bikes song, and some of the members of All the Apparatus are going to be showing up. I actually just confirmed that with them.
Nice.
And so it's going to be a great time.
That's lovely.
Yeah, wherever the linkage is went on this, but
yeah,
check it out.
Excellent. Well, cool. Dan and Zed, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Yeah.
We really appreciate you coming out. Thanks for sharing your stories, your talent, your ideas and whatnot, your collective passion. It's good stuff. So.
Right on.
All right. We got some mail?
Yeah.
We got mail.
One piece of mail.
Only one mail.
Here. Yes. This is from John in Hawaii. Aloha, Aaron and Brock.
Aloha.
Been listening to the podcast
Mahalo.
For some time now. Not yet.
Oh, sorry.
Excited.
Yes, in fact, you do Mahalo. Have a dedicated listener in Big Island, which my reply as I read this the first time, like I'm at work.
Right.
And I just go, holy shit.
Right, right. It's fantastic.
Because that's where I lived. Aaron, delighted to hear that you are coming out to Hawaii in May. Yes, definitely coming out. I'm not sure about the bike yet. Still working on that. Believe you mentioned you needed some advice on getting your bike here. Email me with more details. Excellent. I will do that. As you probably know, it's never cheap flying with a full-size bike, which is one of the reasons why I made the move to a Brompton a couple of years back. I will put your path bike and hike map in the mail for your convenience. Additionally, I'd be delighted to meet you in person to talk story. which is Hawaiian for interview.
Oh, there we go.
If that fits into your plans while you're on the island. Please don't hesitate to let me know if there's anything else you need a hand with, John. And John is actually director of programs and development at this thing called PATH, which is People's Advocacy for Trails in Hawaii, which is sort of kind of like the BTA of Hawaii.
Okay.
In a way.
Very cool.
Yeah. Looked them up. They have a website, pathhawaii.org. So even in Hawaii, like, bicycling is catching on.
Well, it totally makes sense in Hawaii.
Oh, hell yeah. You know, with the weather like that.
Well, and you got one road around the edge of the island, you know. I mean, why there's not more done towards making cycling accessible in Hawaii, I don't know.
That's true. Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah, I love the idea. I love the fact that you're going, Aaron. I expect you to come back with maybe an audio recording of you talking to John or something
like
that.
Yeah, definitely that. At the very least, awesome. if not stories from doing the circumference of the island, which is what I'm hoping to do.
That'll be exciting. Cool. Well, we're probably at a good time to close out our show. Do you want to do one more piece of music, Dan?
I absolutely do. Excellent. I hope I made it real clear here. I'm strumming my guitar.
The body language. Yeah, the guitar is at the ready. Yeah.
You know, you can cut this in, cut this out, but this is Naked Bike Ride, and the World Naked Bike Ride is happening, sometime in June during Petapalooza.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
he once played the song and I rode around naked and it was great. It was inspirational.
Very.
Yes. It inspires me to get naked. It should inspire you to get naked too.
Going on a naked bike ride, you won't believe your eyes. Going on a naked bike ride, it's a full moon surprise. Going on a naked bike ride, I got the wind blowing through my hair. Going on a naked bike ride, 'cause it feels so good down there. Gonna do it by day, gonna do it by night. Gonna ride our bikes naked to our heart's delight. Don't need no diesel, don't need no gas. Just two strong legs and one crash helmet. Going on a naked bike ride for my nation's independence. Going on a naked bike ride, I'm leaving something for my descendants. Going on a naked bike ride, it's my patriotic duty. Going on a naked bike ride, check out my big green booty. You may find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile.
Yeah.
You may ask yourself, well, how did I get here behind this goddamn bicycle?
How did I get here?
Well, just keep in mind, in your car, you're fully clothed. But on a bicycle. That seems like a good idea. Put your butt on a bicycle. But on a bicycle, you're naked. So we're gonna do it by day, gonna do it by night. Gonna ride a bike naked to a heart's delight. Don't need no diesel, don't need no gas. Just two strong legs and one crash helmet. Going on a naked bike ride, invite all your friends. Going on a naked bike ride, the fun it never ends.
Well done, sir. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Brock.
This has been the Sprocket Podcast, and we had a great time.
This was a great episode. Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and or guests and or drinks. Write us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call and leave us a message at 503-847-9774. Connect with us on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast.
Damn right.
Or live tweet us. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Find him on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. Thanks to Herb Bird for our headline sounder. Find them at herbirdmusic.com.
See y'all later. Have a good
week. Good night, folks.
Bye-bye.
Where did your wife?
She's from Oahu, Kailua. It's on the windward side, I think.
Yep.
We used to go there more often. it's family of five. It's a bit
a little
of a
tougher.
Yeah,
it's a full house, it's five full airplane.
Seats. Five seats. You pay for them all.
Yeah.
There's no discount.
And you only use the edge.
Yeah.
With apologies, Dan, I think you have the worst mic and the worst headphones, so I apologize for that.
Okay.
It's just kind of luck of the draw.
And my voice is thrashed.
It's the roulette.
I was in charge of a six-year-old birthday party.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll just put the mic nice and close then, I guess.
Oh, yeah, that'll work perfectly.
All right.
That baritone voice is coming through.
There we go.
Seriously.
There we go. Check chocolate.
I tell you what.
My chocolate.
I'm boosting the low end just a little bit more.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Get you filled out.